Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Deep three from Kyrie.
And he rattles it home. Around and down it goes for Irving. It's Irving, a fire again. He's hot. Back-to-back possessions. Kyrie Irving with three-pointers. J.R. Smith for three. Moving well, and it's Smith again. And Smith. Two three-pointers made. J.R. Smith, quick release. And he drops another one. As Kevin Love answers with a three for the Cavaliers. To the corner, J.R. Smith. He's got another one. All the way across from James. J.R. Smith hits another. What a five by LeBron. In the corner, Smith gets it right back. Kyrie for three. Yep.
Good basketball.
Ball moving well right there. Kevin Love hits. Quiet right now, though. James trying to get him on their feet again. He hits a three. Great pass. LeBron to Love. Well, that was beautiful. That was a one-handed catch and pass.
We did what we were supposed to do. We took care of home court. You know, we won two games on our home floor. Now we got to go to Detroit, which is going to be a hostile environment, and we got to play well.
You know, we have one goal, and we have one objective every single night, and that's to play our game both offensively and defensively. And, you know, when you got guys like this guy next to me and the rest of the 13 guys, that we all just believe in one thing, and it's how we can be better in their next possession.
I don't know what y'all say from that. I don't take anything from it. But a cheap shot. Does that make you think that you're in his mind or in his head?
I'm definitely in his head, that's for sure.
We had stretches in the game, both in the second and the third quarter, where their runs sort of took our minds for about 3 minutes at a time, where we just stopped doing what we were supposed to do, especially on the defensive end of the floor. Made a lot of mistakes. LeBron's always a pretty good adjustment, yeah. That's really smart coaching to put LeBron on the floor.
Excited about our trade yesterday and where it's positioned us as we try to build this roster, and including as it positions us for the draft next Thursday. Wentz and Goff at this point are pretty consensus 1-2. There's some other talented quarterbacks in the draft as well. As always, there's a risk when you're drafting any quarterback, and even if you're drafting a quarterback at first or second slot in the first round. We really like the eighth slot. There's still going to be really talented players at that spot. There's a lot of depth throughout the first round this year. Yeah, I think we came into the offseason, you know, four or five goals, and a couple of them we've already accomplished. One is finding a great head coach in Hugh. The other two things was to address the quarterback position. We haven't solved that by, in any stretch by, you know, acquiring Griffin. With this trade, we've positioned ourselves, I think, to have, you know, a really strong nucleus of young talent.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome in. It's a Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. How's everybody doing out there? Jim Cushlin hanging out for just a little bit. A few bugs over there in the Bob studio. We're working that out. He'll be back with us shortly, but we got plenty to talk about and dissect before and after that. And a couple of guests coming up a little bit later. Lots of stuff, obviously, in that montage that I always spend half of my day working out just for you. And you heard a lot of Cavs, Pistons highlight, a lot of raining threes, and then who is in whose mind? Getting conflicting answers there, depending on who you're listening to, between Stanley Johnson and that little clip from Stan Van Gundy. So lots of game two of the Cavs-Pistons series we have to talk about over the course of the day today. 107-90, Cavs get the win, up 2-0. Tomorrow night for game three, series shifts to the Palace. And coming up at the 4 o'clock hour, top of the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to have a fun roundtable discussion on not just Game 2, but this series in general. Probably some other things going on in the NBA playoffs with first Chris Manning. He's a writer for FearTheSword.com, Cavside, and SB Nation. He'll be joining us at 4:05, as will Jordan Bellett. He is a writer and podcast guru over at DetroitBadBoys.com. So we're going to roundtable the whole thing, have them all on at 4:05 for a nice big discussion. The other stuff you heard there was from this morning. That was Sashi Brown, the analytics Browns guy. I know, with all the analytics stuff, it still feels weird to call him GM or whatever. Anyway, Sashi Brown responding in the presser today for the Browns on the trade yesterday, trading the number 2 overall pick to the Eagles. They get 8, a third rounder, and a fourth rounder, and a first rounder next year, and a second rounder the year after. So, talking a lot about that, and throughout that, yes, Wentz and Goff are still the highest thought of quarterbacks for this draft, probably going to go 1 and 2. Yes, we the Browns have RG3, but that doesn't mean we're done addressing it. So a lot still to take away, and by the by, we're getting real close to all this too. Next Thursday is round 1 of the NFL draft. And then, of course, rounds 2, 3, and I want to say 4, but maybe it's just 2 and 3 then on Friday night. And then next Saturday, that would be the 30th, would be the rest of the NFL draft. We're going to have those first couple of days coverage for you, being part of ESPN Radio, once again, that we are. All evening and night draft coverage on Thursday for your round 1 and Friday for your rounds 2 and 3. Let's see, Thursday, 7 o'clock, Friday at 6:30, so we'll have all the draft coverage for you right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, and that's just a week away. I mean, through everything that's gone on from a football offseason perspective, it's hard for me to believe that the draft is just about here, but yes, indeed it is. We are T-minus 7 days and counting from the NFL draft, which has gotten all kinds of funky since, for just the fourth time ever and first time since 1997, the top 1 and 2 picks have been traded away by the teams that originally held them. It's only happened 4 times in NFL history. I looked this up for during yesterday's show. We had this year, 97. Then it was 1975, where it wasn't just the top 2, it was the top 3. And top 3 again in 1967. But those are the only 4 times in the entire history of the draft that 1 and 2 have been traded away. Insane draft. It just doesn't happen very often, and that's the world we're now all in, where the LA Rams, and that still sounds funny to once again say after 20 plus years, the LA Rams now being the team on the clock, followed by Philadelphia. It's no longer Tennessee and the Browns. So you heard from Sashi Brown in there. We have time to take phone calls on all of this stuff, and we'll have time, of course, later on in the show as well. 866-240-1065. As of right now, our only book guest is a round table on game 2. Chris Manning, fearthesword.com, Cavside on SB Nation, Jordan Bellett, writer, podcaster, DetroitBadBoys.com. That's also SB Nation. They'll all join us for a round table discussion on this Cavs Pistons playoff series coming up. And I got to play these again for you, because despite the fact that the Cavs tied a Warriors record for most threes in a playoff game, there are 3 other teams that had 20 in a game. One of them was a Warriors, one of the Warriors games from last round, last year's playoffs, and then last night. So in most of the highlights, you couldn't help but hear the background at the cue with the 3, because there was a lot of those raining down yesterday, and it's what allowed the Cavs to pull away. But everything since then has seemed to sidetrack to a conversation about who exactly is in whose head. First, and this is the one really making the rounds, we heard from Stanley Johnson.
I don't know what y'all say from that. I don't take anything from it. For the cheap shot, cheap mom. Does that make you think that you're in his mind or in his head?
I'm definitely in his head, that's for sure.
Okay, first things first, if you're in LeBron's head, judging by his performance and at times his enthusiasm last night, there were a couple of slams at points early in that game where I haven't seen LeBron that exuberant on the floor in a little while. So if you think you're in LeBron's head, I got news for you, Stanley Johnson. You're probably not. But if anybody was in anybody's head yesterday, and, you know, depending on which feed you were watching, TNT's feed brought it up, the Cavs feed, if you were having to watch on Fox Sports Ohio, brought it up. Honestly, I was flipping between the two, and only real late did I realize that the Pistons version on Fox Sports Detroit was also on. So I don't know exactly what they specifically said, but you could kind of see it. It was mentioned. And after the game, Stan Van, we'll play that clip again for you here in a second, he brought it up as well. If anybody looked to be in anybody's head, it was the Cavs slightly in the Pistons' head, only on the grounds that That was a defeated-looking team late in that game. The kind of it's the kind of facial expressions and things that you see when you know you're going down, and in essence, you're just trying to not have the whole world cave in on you. And it's not yet for the Pistons. They still played hard through two games. I mean, after all, they led by five early in that third before the Cavs just took them out for the whole rest of the night and made the score a 17-point game. It was a close first half, and we know what happened in game one. But there was just a point in that second half where the Pistons looked defeated and out of whack completely. And again, Stan Van brought that up in his postgame.
We had stretches in the game, both in the second and the third quarter, where their runs sort of took our minds for about 3 minutes at a time, where we just stopped doing what we were supposed to do.
Exactly. And I sure as heck saw that, too. And you usually see that. If you're in a game, if you've watched enough NBA basketball, or any basketball for that matter, and somebody is beating the snot out of the other, you notice late second half, the other team that's down doesn't seem as crisp, certainly doesn't look like they're going through their offense in a normal situation, just kind of bringing the ball up the court, usually taking a bad shot. And yeah, we saw a lot of that from the Pistons yesterday in that game. So the debate rages on who's in whose head in terms of Cavs-Pistons series. And based on what I saw last night, I don't think Stanley Johnson's correct that he's in LeBron's head. And I'm not suggesting that the Cavs are necessarily in the Pistons' head either for fouls or whatever. But if anybody took a mental lapse or anything from a mental standpoint last night, it was towards the end of that game where the Pistons had the look of a team that was defeated, at least for that night. I still expect them to steal a game in this series, not have it be a clean sweep, as it now shifts to the Palace for Friday night's game three, and then Sunday night it's a game four. It's the last game on Sunday. Even the Western Conference games will play before the Cavs-Pistons game four. So you got a weekend coming up in Detroit, and I still think the Pistons are going to be able to take one of these. I really do. And we've seen what they can do through three games, or two games, especially in that first one. And to a degree in the first half of the second game, yes. They weren't hitting nearly as many shots, and that's actually trying to what I'm re-looking up right now, the percentage numbers, because one of the things we all thought after game one, or at least I certainly did, was that the Detroit Pistons are certainly not going to shoot that well again. And true enough, 43% overall in the game from the field, 4 of 17 from downtown. To put that in perspective, where'd it go? Well, to put it in perspective, you know, they made, what was it, 15 threes the Pistons made in game number one? There was stretches of that game where you swear the Pistons just weren't going to miss. At least I did. Let me double check those numbers. Yeah, 15 of 29, 51% versus 4 of 17. 50% from the floor versus 43. So again, didn't shoot nearly as well as they did in game one, which a lot of us thought would be the case. However, I think what really destroyed the Pistons in this game, and I know Pistons fans are probably tired of hearing about this kind of thing, I think it was, from a Cavs perspective, it was a very successful hackadre. Hackadre, whatever the expression for Andre Drummond's is, because we all have different little tag names at the end of it. Sure, Andre had 20 points, but he was 4 of 16 from the line because the Cavs just kept sending him there in a couple of stretches, right when they were taking the lead in the third quarter. Not to mention, Drummond also only got 7 rebounds in this game. He led the Pistons. The next closest was Reggie Jackson. He shot 50%, but it didn't even try a single three-pointer. Marcus Morris was only at 11. He was 2 of 10. So the simple fact of the matter is, as many of us suspected, the Pistons did not shoot nearly as well in Game 2 as they did in Game 1. Cavs used a successful hackadre, and they also made a lot more of their shots, especially from downtown, 20 of them to be precise, which ties an NBA playoff record. Usually when those kind of numbers get thrown at you on both ends, that usually means a loss. And that's exactly what happened to the Pistons, 107-90. But everyone's focused on the debate of who exactly is in whose head today. Stanley Johnson says he's in LeBron's head. Stan Van Gundy said, well, it's not that they're in our head, but we had mental lapses in that second and third quarter. You sure did. You sure did. So it's 2-0 Cavs in that series, shifting to Detroit, to the Palace, and that'll be coming up on Friday night for Game 3 and then Sunday night for Game 4. Speaking of playoffs, we do have another crucial one involving Detroit tonight. And this one could be for a whole season. Red Wings Lightning, Game 5, back south in Tampa. Red Wings are sadly just 1-for-21 on the power play so far in this series. Technically, as of this moment, and I'm going to double check before my SportsCenter update here in a few, technically undecided if it's going to be Peter Mrazek or if it's going to be Jimmy Howard in net. Either way, Red Wings got to do something on one of those fronts because they are down 3-1. And even though it's now 25 consecutive years in the playoffs, a loss tonight will be third year in a row for early first-round exits. That's a 7 o'clock faceoff for the Detroit Red Wings trying to keep their season alive. Excuse me. And, of course, the other big story today, which started yesterday right before the show, and now we have audio of it because their press conference was today, and that's the Cleveland Browns trading the number 2 pick to Philadelphia. And honestly, ever since the Rams swapped with the Titans, at least me, this is what I'm in favor for. Now, sure, Bob mentioned yesterday, and he's completely correct. After everything the Browns have done to screw up drafts, you can't have any faith in them. And even though it's a new crew this time, again, I totally agree with him. There's been enough of a track record that even with an entire new front office, it doesn't really matter. We have to see them not screw it up to believe it. But at that point, plus RG3, and especially the plus RG3 part, you got to fill holes somewhere. And if the Browns are going to be with or without RG3, if they're going to be as bad as everybody thinks they're going to be this year, then they're going to be right back in that top five in a position to draft another quarterback. And hey, if it doesn't work out for Philly, their pick might be pretty high too, because now the Browns have two in the first round next year. 866-240-1065. Those are the numbers to join us. Tons and tons to go over here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Also have some wonderful prizes to give away. It's Thursday, so that means sweet deal, among other things. We're going to have a roundtable discussion with Chris Manning of Fear the Sword Cavs SB Nation, Jordan Bellett, Detroit Bad Boys Pistons SB Nation. Nice roundtable discussion on that Cavs Pistons series coming up at 4:05. And your phone calls on all this and much, much more here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Be part of the Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5, The Ticket.
I don't know what y'all say from that. I don't take anything from it. But a cheap shot. Does that make you think that you're in his mind or in his head?
I'm definitely in his head, that's for sure.
We had stretches in the game, both in the second and the third quarter, where their runs sort of took our minds for about 3 minutes at a time, where we just stopped doing what we were supposed to do.
Well, guess what? He's back! Appreciate you holding down the fort for us there, Kush, while we got all the little bugs
happy
worked
to do
out.
It. No problem.
All we had to do was whip the hamster a few more times. He started running and powering the place again. So we got it working out just fine now. All right. Now,
it's a hamster. It was only a guinea pig last time.
Well, you know, they die frequently, and we had to replace them with other rodents.
Touché.
Don't tell PETA. Don't tell PETA we're using rodents on wheels to power our radio facility, for crying out loud.
But it's green. Right.
Jim, I got to get in on some of the stuff you were talking about now that I have a microphone that works. Stanley Johnson, let me hear that cut again. And it's hard to understand some of what he says at the beginning, and then, of course, some of it had to be beeped out. But I want to hear that again, please.
I don't know what y'all say from that. I don't say anything from it. But a cheap shot. Does that make you think that you're in his mind or in his head?
I'm definitely in his head, that's for sure.
What exactly was he saying? Was he saying cheap attack or cheap
It felt like a cheap shot or something like that.
Yeah, I thought I heard the word attack.
Yeah, but I heard that too.
And he's talking about this shoulder first collision that he initiated, LeBron initiated with Stanley Johnson while walking past him at midcourt.
Right.
Timeout was just called. Pistons were up 26-17 at the time. And according to Johnson, if I heard some of that right, and reading an account of it too, he says, quote, he was walking away. I was walking in a straight line. I didn't bump him. He bumped me. It was a cheap shot, a cheap bump. That's all it was. But there were some beeps there, so he said more than just cheap, it sounds like. But from that point on, LeBron James played about as aggressive as we have seen him play this season. He, Jim, you mentioned it during some of your commentary before. He had some dunks and then some dunk glares, some dunk stares that you just usually don't see in a first-round matchup, and you certainly don't see seem to need against a 19-year-old rookie.
Yep.
But he was delivering some messages via those stares. And I'm going to tell you something that you're probably going to laugh at. Stanley Johnson's right. Stanley Johnson is right. He is in LeBron's head. Make no mistake about it. There's no other way to see it. There's no other way to say it. There's no other way to deny it, certainly. He is in LeBron's head. But that's not a good thing. You see, when somebody says they're in somebody's head, usually that means that they are playing a certain way or conducting themselves in a certain manner or playing with a certain style that is driving another guy nuts, and you get in his head and it throws him off his game. That's not the kind of in his head that Stanley Johnson is. Rather than throwing LeBron off his game, all it has done is ticked LeBron off. But yes, he is in his head. There is no other explanation for those dunks and those dunk glares and stare downs and that shoulder bump he's talking about and some of the incredible physicality between these two guys in this game. Yesterday and on Tuesday, we talked about how clearly Stanley Johnson is not in awe of the moment. We talked about how he's courageous enough. He's got, you know, onions big enough, maybe grapefruits, to call out LeBron James and say, you know, when I study film, I see some things I can take away from him. And then saying, you know what, if he wants to throw me around, fine, I'll throw him around too. That's pretty gutsy. And I said yesterday and Tuesday, and Jim, you agreed,
mm-hmm.
that I like that. I like the moxie.
I did too.
I like the aggressiveness. I like the I'm not here to genuflect and bow and kiss the ring of the king.
Or we're just not we're not happy just to finally make the playoffs.
Right.
It was that part of that right seemingly frame of mind.
Well,
that,
I don't
that
think that mattered
had.
As much to him personally with his comments.
Sure.
I mean, that's a Stan Van thing and maybe a team thing.
Yeah.
But this is specific to his matchup with LeBron. He isn't going to just bow down and kiss the ring of the four-time MVP. He's going to come in here and bang and battle with him, right? And I talked about how we like that, but I did say, and you recall this yesterday, you could probably pull the tape, I said, however, it would be ill-advised if he's doing so in order to poke the bear.
Right.
You don't want to poke the bear and get him all ticked off at you, and suddenly you get mauled. Well, guess what? He poked the bear. And guess what else? After the 107-90 beatdown, after the playoff record-tying 23-pointers, after LeBron James put up 27 on him and shot, if I heard correctly, and I didn't chart it myself, but I heard it this morning, 6-for-6 in shots he took against Stanley Johnson. When Stanley was on the floor against him, LeBron didn't miss. So what he said after all of that, to now say, yeah, I'm in his head definitely, he's actually right, but it's not a good thing. You're in his head because he is furious with you. He doesn't like what he perceives to be what Jim, you and I called yesterday some big stones, if you will,
yeah.
to show that he's not afraid of LeBron James. We praised it. LeBron James is seeing it as a sign of blatant disrespect from a 19-year-old kid who's got no business talking to him or saying his name unless it's to say great game, LeBron. LeBron is taking this youngster and taking his challenges to heart for real. And for him to come into this thing, or I'm sorry, to come out of that last night's game number two, even before game three tomorrow night at the Palace, and say, yeah, I'm in his head, is not a good thing, because LeBron is probably going to agree and say, yeah, you sure are, Rook. You're in my head, and you make me want to dunk on you every time I come down the floor. And unlike a lot of other fools, when you get in their head, it doesn't throw me off my game. It drives me to higher heights in my game.
And that's a rarity. You know, whether you're a star, whether an athlete is a star or not, being in their head and them doing things like LeBron did last night, that's still the rarity, which is why, you know, I'm not laughing at your idea here, because actually there's a lot of merit when you really think about it that way. Yeah, I now I'm looking at it and thinking, you know what, Bob, you are
he
right.
Is.
He is in LeBron's head. But this is one of those few athletes, star or not, where being in their head is not actually a good thing.
Now,
and I hadn't
different.
Thought of that through that prism. I'm sitting here all day listening to this, them talk about, and Stanley Johnson's quote that we played, and I'm thinking, what is wrong with you? Did you not see what he did to you after this play? But I hadn't thought of it from the prism that you're coming in, and that's it, because it's so rare. There's only a few, even the stars over the years, still get angry, get in their head, and they mess up. Most don't take it to a different level. There's only been very few over the course of time. So I was thinking it from the prism of, oh, Stanley Johnson thinks he's in LeBron's head and LeBron's screwing up. What planet is he on?
Yeah, and there's a difference between, you know, being in your head and he's screwing up because of it.
Exactly.
And it might not even be just, you know, this is LeBron's persona that somebody gets in his head and it drives him to a higher level. It just might be this kid. You know, because I think sometimes, and I'll be honest with you, I think the Miami Heat are in his head. I think the Miami Heat are in LeBron James' head every time they go down there and he gets back to South Beach, a place he called home for 4 years,
yeah,
playing against the guys that he called teammates and brothers for 4 years. He still calls Dwayne Wade, his brother.
Yeah, yes, he does.
I don't think he's in his right mind there. I think that place and that opponent throws him off his game. And that's why they didn't win there all season. They have looked like Miami is the number one seed.
Actually, if I'm not mistaken, Cavs since LeBron came back last season have lost every game at Miami, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, so I think Miami is in his head in the kind of way that you think of when somebody says that they're in your head, in that I'm throwing you off your game. You're not able to focus. You're either too angry or you're too...
Which I'll admit, all day I've been listening to Stanley Johnson quote. That's what that's been my mindset. That's how I've been thinking is what he meant. But you got a good point that in this case it's not.
Exactly. And you know what, Jim? More to the point. If you listen to Stanley and then read, you know, and you have some of the clips of him there that you've played in terms of audio. But if you also just read some of the comments... it's also very, very true that Stanley is in his own head. It's very, very true that either Stanley or LeBron is kind of, you know, kind of, they're kind of teaming up to get Stanley into that frame of mind that is the wrong frame, meaning the kind that gets you so angry,
yeah,
you're flustered, and you're not able to perform. Listen to some of what he said after the game, besides what you already played. Their whole team talks, he said. All those guys on the bench, they're like cheerleaders. Only 7 or 8 guys are playing, but they're all talking during the game. They might as well be in the stands with all their contributing. Then he said, I wish LeBron would talk when it's 0-0, not when you're up 16. That would show you're confident in what you're going to do. Wait, what? This is a guy who is continuing to poke the bear that is LeBron James, and all the while showing that he is letting the Cavaliers bench get to him. They and the Cavs and LeBron are in Stanley's head. And Stanley is taking entirely too much, in my opinion, entirely too much of the conversation about this series away,
yes,
from people that it needs to be on and putting it on himself. I mean, he really, really is. He's using this moment, excuse me, he's using this moment, maybe, you know, to reach the national stage, to kind of finally arrive, I guess, you know, in his 19-year-old rookie year. Say what you want to say about him, but nobody talked about Stanley Johnson in USA Today all season. Nobody talked about Stanley Johnson on SportsCenter all season. Everybody's talking about Stanley Johnson in the NBA playoffs a period of time that is supposed to be dominated by superstars, by Steph Curry, by James Harden, by LeBron James, Chris Paul, by Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. This is when the game is supposed to be dominated in the headlines by the game's very best. Stanley Johnson's getting enough ink and airtime from national publications and broadcasts for him to be a 10-year NBA veteran with five All-Star game appearances. So he's really, really in I think he's doing two things. One, he's trying to get in LeBron James' head to make LeBron James mad. What he doesn't understand is all that it's doing is making LeBron James want to beat him worse, and he's doing it. And then secondly, I think he doesn't realize it, but he's getting mad himself. He's being played by the Cavaliers bench. Stanley's being played by a bunch of guys that he says don't even contribute, but they're all talking down there, and it's making him madder and madder and madder. And guess what? Two straight losses probably make him even more upset. And guess what else? I would not be surprised, even if they don't say it publicly, that if there's a whole bunch of Detroit Pistons, especially some veteran guys, who are thinking, man, shut up, Rook. We're tired of seeing your name. We're tired of hearing you. We're tired of LeBron glaring at you. All you're doing is ticking him off. Shut up and become part of the team concept once again, because you're not helping things. He might even be sowing some own discord on his own team. That's just a hunch. I don't have that from anybody. I'll talk to a couple of people later, including one who covers the Pistons, and see if there's any hint of that. But I would not be surprised if some of the Pistons players just don't want Stanley Johnson to zip his lip.
And there very well could be. And obviously that's something that'll be real tricky for us to end up figuring out. But what you said a few minutes ago in all that, that's actually the interesting point. This whole Stanley Johnson who's in whose head thing right now that everybody's talking about is taken away from, to me, you know, the intricacies of a very interesting game, too. Because, yes, the Cavs won by 17, but they tied a playoff record by draining 23s. You want an example of when the Cavs' offense is going and knocking their shots? See yesterday. The Pistons, for a half, played pretty well again. As expected, they were not hitting their shots at the pace they were in game one, but for a couple foul trouble issues and a few key shots at the same time, they were right there, led early in the third quarter. And the other part, which is the quote that I played in the montage after Stanley Johnson, the one from Stan Van Gundy at the podium, I sure as heck saw that. You want to talk about mental things bringing, you know, you're talking about Stanley Johnson specifically. You want to talk about mental things bringing players down in this game last night. I saw it all over the faces of the Pistons guys late that it's one of those days we're packing it in hoping things are better in Detroit. By the end of that game, I saw a defeated Pistons team, which is the first time in these two games that I've seen that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty, pretty fairly observed. I think that's pretty accurate. As far as the intrigue of the game itself, and you know what, they led it after one by five or something.
Yeah, no, Pistons three. Were up by five after
it was
one.
Five.
It was
yeah,
five.
And then they were down what?
Two.
They were down two at the half, and then they led early in the third. Excuse me. And you talk about the Cavaliers going off on one of their shooting benches. That's just JR. That's just JR. Okay, now I know they made 20 as a team, but he had seven of them. And this is just the JR swish. When he gets going and becomes that guy, it's a different dynamic to the entire offense. But if you look at it, you know, Kevin Love made three. He made more net the night before. Or in game one, I mean. Kyrie Irving made two. He was two out of three from distance. He had five in the first game. I'm trying to track all of this right now, and I'm having a hard time gathering everything as it refreshes on me. But I'm just looking for the rest of the shooting. My point to that saying all that is, the Cavaliers, as a team, didn't shoot the ball so exceptionally well. But they feed off of and they get into a rhythm when JR goes off. Now JR, as we know, after a After a 7 of 11 for three from JR Smith, you know full well that this is a guy who can go 1 for 8 or 1 for 9 the next time around. And that's just who he is. And when that happens,
big time shooters are. You either got it that night or you don't usually.
Yeah, and you know what? I apologize.
He's the epitome of that to me on this team.
I apologize, by the way. I was looking in the wrong column. I was looking at free throws, not threes, for Kyrie. Kyrie had four. So he had one less than he had in game one. He was 4 for 7. Kevin Love was 3 for 7. That one was right. LeBron James was 2 for 4. Dele had one. McRae had one. Channing Frye had one. Richard Jefferson had one. And Shump was 0 for 2. The point to all of that is this. They are not a great shooting team on a nightly basis. That would make them the Warriors. They are a team that has to move the ball, play together, get buckets in transition, and yes, be able to work inside and out with Love, especially when he plays inside at the center position.
And they did that again, and it still looked like the Pistons didn't have an answer for it.
They didn't. They just don't. And that'll probably continue to be the case in games 3 and 4, even if the Pistons are able to pull one out. But they have to be able to move the ball. This is not a team that you just can come down on a regular basis anyway and start launching. It's just not their game. Last night it looks like their game because they're 20 for 38. Well, outstanding percentage. You made 52% of your threes. You will not do that on any kind of regular basis. You will do that very, very rarely, in fact. The Pistons, by the way, by contrast, 4 of 17 for 23% from beyond the arc.
After making 15 in game one.
Right. And that's a prime example, even though the Cavaliers have better players, of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's a prime example. You can catch fire in one game, and it's just an old NBA and it's an old basketball adage. It's something I teach my son at the junior high level, that if you live by the three, you die by the three. And my kid is in love with the three-point line, and he's a good shooter. He's got a nice stroke, and when he's on, he can carry a team. But when he's off, doggone it, you better find another way to contribute. You better find another way to get buckets. You better find another way to move the ball. You better get your butt down to the blocks and board people and get some boards. So that's, excuse me again, boy, this cough is driving me bananas. But at any rate, that's the Cavaliers, you know, thing. If they fall in love with that three, live by it, or try to live by it, they will die by it just as easily, and don't go counting on that kind of red-hot shooting. And again, it was primarily driven by JR. When JR doesn't shoot that well, others aren't inspired to shoot that many. And that's the other thing. You know, every time they see JR rise up and splash one, it gets contagious. And it can really help guys kind of get their own mojo going, so to speak, when it comes to long-distance shooting. And that's fine if he's hot. But if he's not, and then they try to do it anyway, then they've got their problems. So there's just a little bit more on what's going on with this series in terms of the Pistons and the Cavaliers. I want to get a quick timeout now, Kush. But before I do, before I give you this timeout, I want to get somebody to call this phone number, 866-240-1065, and win our sweet deal of the week. It's a $50 gift certificate to Rosie's Italian Grill. And by the way, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., you can log on to 1065theticket.com and get a $50 gift certificate for just $25. That's right. Half off on the price while they last, online at 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. But caller 10 right now to 866-240-1065 gets a $50 gift certificate to Rosie's Italian Grill. Call now. On the other side, I want to shift gears and talk about the passing of a legend. That's right, the passing of a legend. Tell you all about that coming up next on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza as we roll on right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I want to say congratulations, of course, to our winner of the sweet deal of the week, and that is Dan Kirshner. Dan Kirshner of Toledo is the winner. He was caller number 10, so congratulations to Dan. Very well done, sir. I want to take a moment, and I don't normally do this. We try to keep sports on sports, you know, right here on sports. Well, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, still known as Sports Radio 106.5 on our Twitter feed, by the way. I normally don't like to do anything other than sports on the show, but I got to tell you, man, I was hit hard today. I really was. I was hit hard today by the news that that we had lost one of the great artists, of not just my time, but really of all time. I grew up in the 1980s. It was my junior high years, 1981 and 1982, my high school years, and my college years from 1986 to 1990. And that was the heyday. That was the heyday. That's when He really, really began to emerge along with Michael Jackson as perhaps the two greatest performing artists, dare I say, of all time? Not of all time. You can't, because you got to go to Elvis and you got to go to the Beatles and you got to go to Sinatra and you got to go to, you know, people like that and, you know, the Rolling Stones and so on and so forth. But when I talk about the legacy of Prince as a musician, I talk about that from the standpoint of ultimate respect. Ultimate respect. His talent, the talent that Prince had for songwriting, for stage shows, dancing, choreography, presence, lyrics, the lyrical genius. And he played, I don't even know how many different instruments. That's what separated him, in my opinion. That's what separated him, in my opinion, from Michael Jackson, is Michael Jackson was a great singer and Michael Jackson was a great dancer, but he never played any instruments. Prince was an absolute musical genius. And to me, and I'm struggling really, really hard here. I'm trying so hard to get my player to load because I want to play just a little bit of Purple Rain. Maybe I'm not going to be able to do that, but I could probably bring you something, even if it isn't Purple Rain. Yeah, I could probably do this right here. This is When Doves Cry. But his ability to play and sing and perform, I was mesmerized as a kid. As a teenager, I wouldn't even say just a kid, as a teenager, high school kid, college student, whatever. But I was mesmerized by his talent. You know, everybody has a little guilty pleasure, right? Jim, a movie that might come on late at night or on a weekend when you're home alone and there's nobody else there. And if somebody else was there, if you were flipping around the channels and you saw that movie, you just keep right on going.
We all have those. We all have our own list with that. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you're by yourself, you're like, oh, cool. And you turn it on and you sit down and that's it. That, one of my guilty pleasures, and I'm going to say this on live radio, which is, you know, like I said, might be embarrassing, but with Prince dying today at the age of 57, which still just blows my mind. I want to just go ahead and say it. Purple Rain, the 1984 movie, I think it came out in 84, about the same time as this, the Purple Rain album did, the one that, that made him the legend that he is. That movie is one of my guilty pleasures. That movie is one of the things. Now, I should also say, and maybe somebody else can kind of like feel this too, it's not just Prince, because Morris Day and The Time are phenomenal. And I've always loved them back in the 80s, too. Morris Day and The Time perform in Purple Rain, and their stage show is just as, well, not just as, but you know, they're the villain, they're the bad guy, if you will, in the story of Prince's life and the rise to superstardom and the Minneapolis music and club scene. That's where he's from. But that movie is one of my guilty pleasures to this day. As a man in my 40s, pushing up toward not being in my 40s anymore, not in the not-too-distant future, it's still one of my favorites. I'll turn it on and I'll watch it, as cheesy as it is, and I wouldn't watch it in front of anybody else probably, but on this day, the day that Prince passes away, I will acknowledge my guilty pleasure, and I'll tell everybody, because he was that good, he was that brilliant of an artist. Did you ever see the movie, Jim? I know you're younger. It's called Purple Rain.
No, I didn't.
Do you like Prince at all?
He's all right.
Okay, so you're too young to really understand and appreciate, you know.
I mean, I was born 1981, so.
Okay, no, understood. Although I don't understand too terribly much though, because I was born in 1967, and guess what? I still am a Doors fan. Okay, so you got to study the legends and you got to listen to the legends. But for anybody my age, tell me I'm not right about Prince. Tell me I'm not right about Purple Rain. The doves are crying all around the world today. as Prince was found dead in his Minneapolis mansion, his estate, whatever you want to call it. And the pop culture world is that much sadder for his passing. Prince, dead today, 21st day of April in the year of our Lord, 2016. All right, going to take a timeout. Going to get a top of the hour Sports Center. Want to get hour number two started with a little more basketball. We've got an NBA roundtable coming your way. We're going to have Pistons point of view from a Pistons writer. We're going to talk to Jordan Belant, or Belant. I'm not sure. Jordan will tell us. But you read him. You don't listen to him too much. You read him on DetroitBadBoys.com. And a Cavaliers point of view from Chris Manning, FearTheSword.com. So a little back and forth on Stanley Johnson, LeBron James, Pistons, Cavaliers. Game 3 coming up tomorrow in the Palace. That'll kick off hour number 2, which is right around the corner on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.